Thank you for downloading our podcast titled Navigating Native Partnerships, How to Build Trust and Advance Health Equity, presented on March 20th, 2024. To view the webinar video and additional resources, please visit our website, keepitsacred.org, and click the Resources tab and the Webinar Archive tab. Please enjoy our presentation. Thank you very much, folks, for attending today's webinar. We're at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock. My name is Mike Ouellette with the Intertribal Council of Michigan. Welcome to our webinar series, Advancing Health Equity in Native Communities. This webinar series aims to reach state and local health departments around the country to advance health equity and address social determinants of health among American Indian and Alaska Native communities. This webinar is titled Navigating Partnerships, How to Build Trust and Advance Health Equity. Your presenters today are Hannah Swartz, MPH, Program Manager on the Tribal Vaccine Equity Project and the REACH Project at the Intertribal Council of Michigan. Beth Seelov, MPH, ERYT 200, Health Educator, for the Cancer Prevention and Control Cancer Prevention and Control Specialist at the Intertribal Council of Michigan, and Heather Medicine Bear, MPH, Program Manager for our All Breath is Sacred Project at the Intertribal Council of Michigan. No commercial interest support was used to fund this activity. As a result of participating in this activity, the healthcare team will identify behaviors that build trust or mistrust with tribal communities, develop strategies for building trusting relationships with tribal communities, and identify community-based participatory approaches to promoting health in Indian Country. A post-webinar evaluation will be emailed within 24 hours after today's presentation. Please keep an eye out for it and let us know how we did. Also, at the end of today's presentation, we'll offer a question and answer session as well. Please type any questions that you have into the Q&A box, and they will be answered within the last 10 to 15 minutes of the hour today. And thank you very much. And at this time, I will toss it to Hannah Swartz.
All right. Hello, everyone. And thank you, Mike, for that introduction. As he mentioned, my name is Hannah Swartz, and I'm a program manager here at the Intertribal Council of Michigan. So today, we're very excited to host the first of our three-part technical assistance webinar called Advancing Health Equity for Native Communities. As Mike stated, today's webinar is Navigating Native Partnerships, How to Build Trust and Advance Health Equity. This webinar series was made possible by funding from the National Network of Public Health Institutes, or NNPHI. And it's our goal today to provide you with some basic information about tribes and tribal health systems, as well as strategies and methods that we at the Intertribal Council of Michigan, we use while working with tribal communities to improve health, prevent disease, and nourish trusted relationships. So please feel free to type any questions that you might have into the chat box the question and answer box. And we'll make sure to monitor that throughout the webinar and answer those as we can. But please know that we're going to hold time at the end to also address any questions that we weren't able to. All right. So a little bit of background information on the Intertribal Council of Michigan. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we are a consortium of the 12 federally recognized tribes in Michigan. We are governed by a board of tribal chairmen and women, and we are located in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, which is right on the border of Canada, so we are far north. Our organization was originally formed in 1968 out of financial necessity. So, as a consortium of federally recognized tribes, we were able to generate more funding for, the much needed programs to support tribal communities. Over the years, we've evolved and we've grown with many different departments and divisions, but we still do the same. We act as a forum for our federally recognized tribes. Excuse me. We advocate for them in the development of programs and policies, and it's also our mission to provide technical assistance to our member tribes, assisting in the development of tribal regulations, ordinances, policies, all applicable to health and human services. So my colleagues are here today. Mike introduced them, but Beth and Heather. And we are going to be presenting to you a part. Wow, excuse me. We are a part of the Health Education and Chronic Disease Department at Intertribal Council of Michigan. And our department does work on a number of different programs for our tribal communities. And they range from cancer control to working to on commercial tobacco, restoring its traditional use. We do nutrition, wellness. We have a number of different programs that we work on. And one of our most recent projects is the Tribal Vaccine Equity Project, if you've ever heard of it. We were working with tribes across the country to reduce vaccine hesitancy and increase vaccine uptake. So we learned a lot through that project. So we're combining some of the lessons learned there, as well as lessons that we've learned over the years. To help support tribal communities. So we hope to share those as you state and local health departments work with tribal communities also. So we'd love to just give you a bunch of tips on working with tribal communities, but there's so much context that needs to be understood before doing so. And I think starting with a little bit of background information on health services available to Native communities would be a great place to start. And then we'll get into some of those tips. But as you can see here, the slide states, in order to walk with and support tribal communities, it's important to understand the pieces of their health system. In a recent webinar that I just attended, a Native speaker said, "Do your homework first. Understand us first, and don't just try to work with us without knowing our culture." So, we hope to provide a little bit of that background today, to help you better support tribal communities. So, it's important to understand the difference between the different values, Native American culture values and Western culture values. There are core values and cultural norms that you see working with tribal communities. I've experienced this even with just creating, messaging for vaccine hesitancy and media campaigns and things like that. So you can read through the list here, but a couple of the most notable contrasts are that American Indians and Alaska Natives place value on the importance of community rather than on the individual. There's also a considerable emphasis on living in harmony with nature. It's important to point out. I urge you to shift your mindset when thinking about implementing public health programming. The mainstream models or gen pop versions of programming most likely will not meet the needs of tribal communities. And I would recommend looking back at this list. At the values and placing them at the forefront as you plan and implement programs to support Native communities. I would also keep in mind that each tribal community that you work with is unique and sovereign, which means that you cannot have a one-size-fit-all approach to working with different tribal communities. We work with 12, and there's 12 tribes in Michigan, and there's 12 different, areas that we need to be aware of and the cultural norms in each of those communities. So just keep that in mind as you work. There's also elements of cultural competence for American Indians and Alaska Natives to keep in mind. Awareness and acceptance of cultural differences is at the forefront, as well as awareness of your own culture and values. And also the ability to adapt is very notable. The fourth one there, ability to adapt individual services, programs, and policies. So again, knowing that one size fit all approach does not work in tribal communities. So I want to kind of shift gears here and hand it over to Heather. Another piece of working with tribal communities is understanding traditional medicine. So I'll hand it over to you, Heather.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you. That was an excellent overview of some of our values that we try to work through in our programming. So I'm going to talk a little bit about traditional medicine and how it compares to some of the westernized biomedical approaches to healing. Westernized biomedical approaches are very much focused on treating the symptoms of disease through medication, through, you know, clinical methods. Traditional medicine, on the other hand, very much focuses on a very holistic perspective to healing. Oftentimes in our culture, in the indigenous ways of knowing and being, illness is seen as a symptom of an imbalance of sorts. So the process of traditional healing and the use of traditional medicine is very natural focused. It's focused on rectifying that imbalance. And that imbalance is not just focused on symptoms of disease. So it involves a lot of spiritual work, prayer, trying to reconnect an individual with physical, emotional, and spiritual health. And that includes connection with community. It includes connection with land and our ancestors. Historically, those connections have been stripped from Native people. So a lot of disease and illness is associated with those elements. So a lot of our traditional medicines are derived from plants and animals, very respected in our communities, and with incorporating prayer to really heal not just the biomedical types of markers for health, but also the spirit of someone who is sick. Our medicines are always passed down through generational knowledge, through healing and practices. Many of us have traditional medicine in our homes. We use it daily. We share it with our family, with our friends, in our own way. So we do have this individual component, but we also have individuals in our communities who are very much dedicated to serving their people through traditional healing, dedicating their lives to understanding all of the elements involved in healing practices. And it's a massive responsibility when somebody undertakes this journey to become a traditional healer. I myself have benefited from traditional healing. I've seen how it's benefited others. So we know how modern medicine relies on very scientific evidence, clinical trials. We need to validate efficacy. Traditional medicine relies on years and years and generations of empirical knowledge and cultural wisdom. So there's a goal to integrate traditional healing into our health systems within and using scientific westernized frameworks to validate traditional medicine. It is difficult, but it is possible. There are many efforts being made to validate traditional medicine and integrate it into the systems. Many different programs, especially through tribal health systems are trying to do this. Having a profound respect for traditional healing as a resource really strengthens our cultural identity, empowers our people, and supports our health systems. It's a good pathway towards building resiliency and improving health for Native people. So some of the elements of integration, like I said, it's difficult, but it will combine the strengths of both health systems. There's this extreme need for collaboration, mutual respect, so collaboration with physicians and community members. And I think a part of that, which Hannah touched on, is that health systems have to acknowledge and understand historical and social context of tribal health. So there's this broader web of social natural relations that we need to understand and integrate into our systems, which I think would be an effective way to promote health. And this is making sure that providers understand cultural, political, economical, you know, environmental context. We kind of know this based on some of the public health models that we all follow, but specifically focusing through an Indigenous health lens is how we can do this. So there are a number of different recommendations and processes through trainings, policy, you know, verification of traditional healers, funding mechanisms, so that we can meet the specific needs of our people. There are a few policies that have been put into place. You know, we have the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. This affirms our right to our natural medicines. The Traditional Cultural Advocacy Program that was implemented by the IHS, and many other different types of policies available to get started on doing this. But thank you, Hannah, for providing me the opportunity to share the information that I have on this, and I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Heather. I know, you know, traditional medicine is such a key piece of medicine when working with Native communities, and I really wanted to take the time to highlight that. And so thank you, Heather, for doing that. Kind of shifting gears, I'd like to talk about the Western approach to medicine, I guess, more, or the historical background of healthcare for tribal communities. And I have this map here, and it is courtesy of the Social Security Administration, but it depicts all of the 574 federally recognized tribes across the United States. The yellow, the blue, and the pink are more Social Security Administration icons, but you can probably see the smaller black dots. I don't know if you can see my mouse, but they're little black dots on the screen here. And those depict each of the tribal communities, the federally recognized tribes. So you can see there's a lot across the country. They're kind of, you know, under some of these blue icons because there's so many, but there are a lot of tribes in the United States. And, you know, the United States is often referred by our Indigenous culture as Turtle Island. And if you haven't had any, if you've never heard of if you've never heard of Turtle Island, I think you should definitely look it up. That would be like a whole nother presentation on the background of Turtle Island, but I urge you to do a little bit of research there and learn about it. So I digress. The black dots are each represent one of the tribes, and I lost myself here. Each one of the tribes are, you know, they're sovereign nations. So they have their own governments, they have their own citizens, policies, laws, and regulations. And one policy to note is that tribal governments are public health authorities. And with that comes the same jurisdictional authority as a county health department. And I don't know if that's well known So I like to point that out. So for example, in the case of data sharing, when thinking about tribes' public health authority, they need to have access to comprehensive and specific public health data in order to drive public health decision-making, right? We saw that during the pandemic. They really needed, you know, we need the numbers to know what to do. And there is nothing in HIPAA that prevents public health departments, who are public health authorities, from sharing public health data with tribal organizations because they are public health authorities themselves. So authority to authority, you can share that data. And I think that's important to point out as you work with tribal health systems in your area and in sharing information. All right, so it's commonly known that American Indians and Alaska Natives are the only population in the United States who are entitled to health care, but we need to talk about some of the areas that are, I don't know if restricted is the right word, but some of the areas that need support. So the Indian Health Service, or the IHS, as it's commonly known as, is the agency within the Department of Health and Human Services, and they're responsible for providing federal health services to American Indians and Alaska Natives. The provisions of health services to members of federally recognized tribes grew out of the special government-to-government relationship between the federal government and Indian tribes. So IHS is divided into 12 regions. You can see here with the different colors representing the different regions. There's 12. And each IHS area has a headquarters office in those areas that provides services and support to federally recognized tribes, as well as urban Indian health programs. So if you work with tribal communities, maybe in a major city, know that there are urban Indian organizations that administer health programs and services to urban Indians residing in those urban areas. So if they're not in, you know, their tribal service area, there are urban organizations. And I know in Michigan, ours is the American Indian Health and Family Services. They're our urban Indian organization, and these are all resources and organizations I would suggest looking into for supporting tribal communities. So prior to 1975, the IHS ran all tribal health clinics. And then in 1975, the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act, it's a mouthful, tribes were able to exercise their right to self-determination by assuming control and management of programs previously administered by the federal government, aka IHS. So what that did is tribes gained the right to manage their own health systems. And this was a major step forward, as you can see here. There's over 60% now of money that IHS receives is administered through tribes in their own health systems. And this is done through contracts of self-governance compacts. They're commonly known as 638 compacts. So basically, you know, they manage their own health systems. And the numbers you see on the screen, there's over 279 health centers that are operated by tribes, which far exceeds the ones that are operated by IHS now. The development of mistrust of the federal government was a main driver in seeking out these contracts. But there, you know, the IHS is still a huge resource to Native health. So I'm going to hand it over now to Beth to talk about the type of healthcare that is provided through IHS and tribal health systems. Oh, Beth, you're on mute.
Thank you both for setting the stage for this discussion on the type of healthcare that is provided to Native Americans and Alaska Natives. As Hannah stated, Native Americans and Alaska Natives are the only population in the United States born entitled to healthcare. However, there are some provisions to that entitlement. And I will start with Native Americans and Alaska Natives living in their tribal or village service areas. As you saw in the previous slide, there are sovereign tribal communities with hospitals, and there are even more with health centers. And these are, and most of the health centers are integrative in nature. They have primary care, behavioral health. Some have dental and optical support, and many have traditional healers that are available within the integrative health system to support their patients in their service area. So service areas for tribal health systems can vary as each tribal government is sovereign. Tribal service areas can range from a 1 to 3 county service area to an entire state. Some are even more generous and have a regional area. So individuals living in a tribal service area are authorized acute chronic care. They're often provided referred care. And so referred care, we're talking about surgeries, screenings, diagnostic support for anything that ranges from cardiovascular disease to cancer. And all of that is determined by tribal government. So as referrals come up, they're prioritized as funding is available. As you may have read or known, that IHS does not fund clinics at 100%. And so care is rated and ranked. And then as funding becomes available, the care is provided. Now, when we talk about individuals living outside a tribal service area, so when I'm speaking about these tribal service areas, I'm giving you a very broad view as each one is different. And I'm talking about federally recognized tribes because there are many tribes across the US that operate independently and are not supported by IHS or the federal government. So individuals living outside a tribal service area, an example is an individual is a member of the Sioux tribe in Michigan, and they move for work to Wisconsin. So as a Sioux tribe member, they are authorized to come back to the Sioux tribe for acute care, right? So they have a cold, the flu, they may need a prescription for a chronic disease. However, because they live outside the tribal service area, they are not entitled to referred care for that specific tribe. So while that entitlement is there at birth, it supports primary care and acute care at an IHS-funded facility, but they're not supported for referred care. And individuals who are not a member of a federally recognized tribe are often not covered by a tribe or IHS, but often are urban-facing organizations where a predominance of Native Americans and Alaska Natives live in these urban areas, are often supported by these nonprofit urban health centers. If there's any questions regarding this, please feel free to put it in the question and answer. As I'm saying, this is just a very broad view. And one other thing to note, tribal health centers do accept health insurance. So tribal members who have private pay insurance, do use their tribal health clinic, and tribal health clinics bill private insurances. They bill Medicare, Medicaid, and many are federally qualified health centers. So they have the same programming as an FQHC in a county anywhere in the United States.
Yep. Yeah, and like Beth said, if you have questions, please feel free to put them in the Q&A box and we'd be happy to address them. It's tricky, I know. All right. So like Beth said, you know, just because care is entitled, you know, entitled, I like to think of that word, it does, there are areas based on where you live where you could not receive that care. So not only where you live affects, you know, your care, but there is an underfunding of the IHS. So to give a brief overview of the difference you see here on the screen, you see the non-entitlement programs and the entitlement programs. So to give you kind of a difference of that, so mandatory spending is for entitlement programs like Medicare or Medicaid. Spending on these items, it must be funded every year. Whereas discretionary spending is for the non-entitlement programs. And Congress sets a new level of funding each year through the appropriations bill for programs like IHS and Veteran Health Administration, the VA. So the IHS is reliant on yearly appropriations for continued operations. When that fluctuates, so does the, you know, the amount of money available for care. And currently it's estimated that IHS is funded at about 56% of the need. And that's a pretty conservative number. You can see in the picture the difference in per capita spending for each of the government programs, and IHS is the lowest there. So there's definitely something to be aware of as you work with tribal health systems. Just because they have funding doesn't mean that they have enough to meet their need. And that's where health departments, state and local, can step into support if requested. So as we think about supporting tribes, it's important to highlight tribal serving organizations. One of the biggest is National Indian Health Board, or NIHB. They are a powerful force on Capitol Hill, and they advocate for tribal governments, both those that are operated by IHS and those that are tribally run. They provide a variety of services to tribes, area health boards, tribal organizations, and other agencies. Like they provide technical assistance, policy formation, research, and a number of other services. So they are definitely a resource to be aware of. And yeah, like I said, there are area health boards in each of the IHS regions that I mentioned, the 12 different regions. There's area health boards in those who could be a key contact and resource when working with tribal communities. Another organization that supports tribal communities across the country are tribal epidemiology centers, or TECs. A lot of times they're referred to. So these were established by and receive core funding from the IHS, and they are present in each one of those IHS regions also, except for maybe one. And their purpose is to support American Indian, Alaska Native communities in identifying and understanding health problems and disease risks. So strengthening public health capacity and developing solutions for disease prevention and control. So they do a lot of data collection and evaluation work to identify priorities, identify health priorities for the tribes. They're a great asset and resource, and they are available in consultation with and by the request of tribes. So they work with tribes at their request. Just something that I'm not sure everyone knows about, but I wanted to make sure to point that out. So like those tribal serving organizations, Intertribal Council is also a tribal serving organization. And we have two, or I guess there's three of us here, colleagues of mine, and we're going to take the rest of the presentation to introduce ourselves and provide some strategies that we think could help build trusted relationships with tribal communities. I do want to hold space for our department director, Laura Fisher, as she is has experienced a loss in her family, but she is a wonderful asset to our team. And we know she wanted to be here, but we have Beth Seeloff and Heather Medicine Bear. So Heather, and I guess Heather, I'll start with you, but if you could maybe give a, you know, more detailed introduction of yourself and talk about the work with tribal communities you've been able to do incorporating community-based participatory approaches, that would be wonderful.
Yes, thank you, Hannah. And I second that about Laura. She's been such an amazing mentor to me as I've come into this program and been working with the Intertribal Council of Michigan. So holding space for Laura. Thank you for doing that, Hannah. So my name is Heather Medicine Bear. I am enrolled in the Gila River Indian Community, Akame Owatam. We are known as the River People. I'm also a mother of three little boys, four, and two. So I'm very proud of that. And I'm very thankful for the opportunities I've been given as raising my three little boys and being able to work with Intertribal Council of Michigan, and also pursuing my doctoral degree in Indigenous Health from the University of North Dakota. So I'm a doctoral candidate now. I'm working on my dissertation. It's focused on understanding and addressing cardiometabolic health in tribal communities through research, programming, and policy. So I'm finishing that up, and hopefully I'll be graduating. I will be graduating in August. And my most recent endeavor or initiative with the Intertribal Council of Michigan is the program manager for the Our Breath is Sacred Three Fires Menthol and Flavored Reduction Project, which we get to work very closely with community to implement evidence-based interventions to reduce the burden of menthol and flavored tobacco on our communities. Through my experiences with ITCM and my doctoral program, very much focused on promoting community-based participatory approaches. We focus on Indigenous evaluation methods, ethics, policy, and in my PhD program, we focus a lot on research, Indigenous health research. So I was also the former program manager for the National Native Network. And I think the National Native Network, which ITCM was the overseer of that, was a really good example of implementing community-based approaches through establishing very meaningful partnerships with tribes and tribal serving organizations like ITCM. So our partners are the California Rural Indian Health Board, the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Board, and the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. And we've also worked with many other tribal serving organizations across the country to effectively serve a very wide range of communities. One of the components of CBPR that I think, or community-based participatory research, which we adapt to programming, which I think is incredibly important, is the long-term commitment to sustainability. So a lot of our programs that have been implemented in the past are still active today because we made the effort to build capacity within tribes so that these programs continue on to build on health. So providing tools, providing knowledge, for effective programming strategies and maintaining that commitment was so important with the National Native Network. And it's something that we do at ITCM as well. So involving it's so important to involve community in every phase of planning. So from, you know, establishing a community advisory board in the planning process to implementing or implementation or dissemination if you're working in research or data collection, and including evaluation. We also work with the Michigan Public Health Institute for our evaluation efforts, and I am so impressed at how wonderful of a job that they do with working with ITCM, working with community, so that we get really valuable and meaningful feedback on how we can effectively strategize our programming to be relevant and beneficial to tribal communities. So CBPR, or it's adapted to, so CBPR would be community-based participatory research, but we adapted to programming. There are so many elements that we incorporate that I'm really proud of.
Yeah, there's so much of it that we do in our work. So thank you, Heather. And Beth, I don't know if you want to build on that and do a nice introduction of yourself as well.
Thank you, Hannah. My name is Beth Seeloff, again, and I am a cancer prevention and control program manager and public health specialist at the Intertribal Council of Michigan. And I have been with the Intertribal Council of Michigan since 2018. And prior to that, I had a career in Washington, D.C., and then I had the good fortune of moving to rural northern Michigan and the home of the Anishinaabe people. And one of the most important lessons I can share with anyone is when you're working with tribal communities and you're walking with them and developing programs, it's important to listen to understand and not respond, right? You're listening to truly understand. And remember that each tribe has unique social, political, historical, cultural, and geographic landscapes that are unique to their sovereign community. And that it is not a one size fits all. You know, the strategies that you use when you are supporting one tribe may or may not work with the next tribe. So, you know, just as you would work with your own children, as Heather mentioned her children, it's you meet them where they're at, right? And you understand, just as you would talk to anyone, any colleague, you know, it takes listening sessions and understanding that your Western evaluation methods or values may not be their methods or their value. And so walking with them means that you may have to walk a different path than you usually do in your public health department, your academic landscape, and truly take that community-based participatory approach to a higher level, right? And understanding and uniting with individuals that do have relationships with the tribes, asking for introductions, asking for time to listen, and really inquiring to their needs. I often have witnessed organizations, hey, we have this for you. You should implement it, instead of, we have this. Would it adequately support your community? How can I support you? Or can we work together so that we can share this across the landscape of the state or the nation as a whole, right? So it's not saying we have this product or we have this evidence-based intervention and it works, you know, in Illinois. Well, it may not work in Michigan, or it works in urban areas. Well, it may not work in rural areas. So understanding where the our indigenous populations need support, and really listening to their needs, right, and what they consider a success.
Yeah, that's such a key piece. I know in a lot of work that we've done, you know, it's like, why do we need to report on this? It's not valuable to us. We're basically checking a box for the funder. So if you are a funder or working with tribes, maybe shift your mindset a little bit and ask, you know, what's an important evaluation piece that you would want, you know, for as feedback for your community. So we've done that in the past and it's worked really well. I know in some of the work that I've done, we had smaller funding opportunities, and you know, there's so much more work that's done that's not in an evaluation report, that is not just a number, that's a story. And there's so much storytelling that we could do. We could talk forever, but we held a space. Yes, we had the, you know, more of the numbers and reporting mechanisms that are traditional, but we also hosted a space where we had a Zoom conversation call where we could hear about more of the qualitative feedback. What were they hearing from the community? And that is so valuable to not only report on, but to hear and to hold space for. I don't think there's enough, I guess I'm stumbling on my words here, but it's important to hear those stories and it's important to tell them is what I'm trying to say. So I know there's a lot of folks on here who may be from state or local health departments. So my next question for Beth and Heather, is what has your experience been working with state and local health departments while serving tribal communities? And are there areas that could improve? And I urge folks who are attending, are there questions that you have for us? That, you know, how can you work with tribes better? Please ask those in the Q&A box and we'll get to those. But Beth or Heather, if you'd like to take that question on.
I can go ahead, Heather.
Okay, thanks, Beth. I can just briefly kind of explain my experience. In my experience working with local and state health departments, they're very eager to work with tribes. In my experience, however, there's still a lot to learn. And sometimes this inexperience that some people might have working with tribes kind of deters them from even approaching tribes. So I think it does take some significant effort on behalf of the state or local health department to do some individual research, maybe on policy, you know, history, socioeconomic statuses within the tribes. That way you could really introduce relevant initiatives and enhance partnerships. So we had a very successful initiative with the state tobacco programs through our state initiative for tobacco equity. And we spent a whole year with providing different technical assistance and trainings and education on all of those things, those historical contexts, data sovereignty, building relationships, how to engage, which I think was a key component in what our next step was starting to be and was going to continue on to be, was really connecting the state departments with their tribal partners. There was a lot of great conversation. So hosting this community of practice was very beneficial, I think, on both sides. There was this reciprocal sharing of knowledge, which I think is extremely important in building these trusted relationships. I think also, I'll let Beth answer, and then I think I have, I'll let Beth answer.
Well, I will, I'll start with the trust. I think it's really important that you build trusted relationships with mentors who can support you in building future relationships with tribal communities. My experience in working, I'm very fortunate to have worked with Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, and they often bend over backwards to ensure that programming is adequately supporting tribal communities. And as our needs grow, they ensure that we have the resources to extend and create capacity, especially in rural communities. And it's important that you look through a different lens, right? And you look through that lens of equity and ensure that often folks are putting an urban template, right, on top of a community and saying, here, make this work. And look at that urban template and get that perspective of other views, right? Will it work in a rural community? Will it work in an Indigenous community? Just as you would look and work, would a program work in a Hispanic community? Would it work in a MENA community? Like, it's not one size fits all, right? And it's also really important to understand that we talk about rural areas for Indigenous communities, but there is a large population of Native Americans and Alaska Natives in our urban areas. And when you are addressing the needs of persons of color, don't forget them. They're there. And they've long been forgotten, often been tried to, you know, the federal government tried to eradicate them. So, like, it's our job, whoever's on this call and anyone in public health should be there to support them and lift them up. And they're the way they want to grow their programs.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, Beth. You know, it's important to bring those voices to the table, but not just to bring them to the table, to really listen, to take what they're saying into account and bring that into your programming. I think there's been so much in, you know, equity work, and that's wonderful, but it almost seems like, okay, we have everybody here at the table, but we're still going to proceed the way that we were. So I think lifting their voices, hearing them, taking that into account is a big, big piece.
Hannah, we have a question.
Yes.
And it says, hello, I work mostly with vaccination. And one question I have is, what is your experience with vaccination programs and incorporating them in a culturally sensitive way that is respectful of tribal traditions?
Oh, this is a great question. I work in tribal vaccine equity. So we have done a lot of work in vaccines with tribal communities. And I guess one piece that I'll highlight was it kind of in the thick of COVID, and we created a media campaign. So I don't know if many of you have done that, but we wanted to make sure that our messages resonated and landed with the age population that we were trying to reach. So, excuse me. We did that through surveys. We got feedback before we just blasted messages out there. it's really important to know that messages are going to resonate. We took into account those cultural values that we showed in previous slides, respecting elders. So incorporated elders into our messaging. So that was kind of the messaging piece, but an even larger part was, collaborating with community partners. So understanding where do tribal community members go and how can we meet them where they are at to vaccinate them, so they don't have to go out of their way. So a lot of tribal partners that we worked with hosted vaccine clinics at casinos. They hosted them during other events. So they had health fairs. So they had a booth. But I think it's important to not say, you need to get vaccinated, but providing all of the information and having, you know, them make their own decision. Trying to think if there's other pieces. I'm sure there are that I'm not thinking of right now, but I hope that answers a little bit of your question. I didn't catch your name. Yeah, I hope that answers a little bit of your question, but you can probe more if you want more answers. And I'm happy to share my contact information if I can be helpful. I'm also going to drop into the chat our vaccine equity webpage, where we have some resources that might be helpful for you. So are there pieces that you would touch on, Beth or Heather? I know we only have a couple minutes left, but.
I think to understand, especially as you talk about vaccines, right, there's a lot of mistrust. And historically, there's a lot of mistrust, and there are good reasons for the mistrust. I'm not going to go into the complete history. But when we talk about vaccine, it's important to ensure that your materials are clear, concise. You can find trusted messengers within communities, and ensure that the benefit is understood, right? We're not so much talking about the vaccine itself, but disease prevention. And historically, Indigenous populations understand the impact of disease on their community. And so I just hope that you will keep that in mind as you work in this direction. And Hannah's vaccine resources are well done, well tested across the United States. The perspective of many individuals from many different tribes have contributed to those resources. So I encourage you to take a look at them.
Thank you. Yeah, and I dropped that website in the chat if you are interested in checking it out. I do have a really great question, and I think it'd be a great one to end on. So how do we change hearts and minds within our own organization to listen to what we have learned from tribes? That's a big question, but interested to hear your answers, Heather or Beth.
Heather, go ahead.
That's an excellent question. I think being an advocate for tribal populations, even within your own organization, means having difficult conversations sometimes. So sometimes these historical truths and these conversations about mistrust between tribes and government entities can be very uncomfortable to have. But I think opening up that conversation, and if you have the information that you've learned from, you know, attending webinars like this, if you have that information and you've done your own, you know, internal self-reflection and understanding of things, really conveying that to your leadership, to your colleagues, would be so beneficial and so helpful in promoting tribal health. I think that's an excellent question. It's something to reflect on. And we are, as health professionals, constantly, you know, making those efforts, which I think, and I really appreciate. So I do appreciate that question, that that's where somebody's thought process is in promoting health and building health for tribes.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Heather. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up here. And I want to share our, if I can share it correctly. I wanted to share our social media information. I've got my email in the chat, and Beth and Heather, feel free to drop yours in the chat as well. But just wanted to say thank you and Miigwech for being a part of today's call. And we hope that the information that we provided to you is helpful in working with tribal communities. And we are a resource ourselves, Intertribal Council of Michigan, to support you. So we want to again say that this has been recorded and will be available on the National Native Network website. So keepitsacred.itcmi.org, and the link I put in the chat will lead you there. So there is a post-webinar survey that we'll be sending out, and so be on the lookout for that. And again, thank you very much, and we hope that you have a great day. Thanks.
To view the full webinar video and additional resources, please visit our website, keepitsacred.org, and click the Resources tab and the Webinar Archive tab. Thank you for listening to this Webinar Archive presentation.
Heka atona tia.